This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The last time you were on, about a year ago, you had said essentially at that point that the only thing that could save us was an immediate cessation of all industrial activity. How much further do we have to go now?
I strongly suspect that because of those positive feedbacks, even completion of the ongoing collapse will not prevent near-term human extinction as a result of climate change. Scenario that would involve geoengineering and complete collapse and 27 other miracles that you might come up with that would actually allow our species to persist beyond another human generation.
That is Dr. Guy McPherson speaking on Mike Rupert's Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network, April 21st, 2013. Are you living in the last human generation? Now that the 2012 Mayan calendar craze is over, there is a new movement claiming we are heading into near-term human extinction. One group says the Northern Hemisphere will be devoid of people by the 2030s, with the population of the Southern Hemisphere dying out a few years later. Why? Due to a combination of events caused by climate change. The Arctic will release very high levels of methane gas, they say. It will come from frozen methane on the shallow seabed, now exposed by the end of the sea ice, and from the land, from rotting vegetation frozen over the ages in the permafrost, now released. Methane is at least 20 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. For a few years, it may be as much as 100 times more powerful. If a lot of methane is released in a decade or two, global mean temperature may rise more than 10 degrees centigrade, some say. It could be twice that in the Arctic. Could our complex industrial civilization survive? It's unlikely agriculture could feed our current billions with the changes. Most current species would disappear in the sixth great extinction. Are humans immune to extinction? Is it happening already? Arctic sea ice is melting more each year. Should we try to cool the Arctic, if not the world? That's the view of a small but growing group of scientists and concerned citizens. It's called geoengineering. Most scientists caution we have not reached such a desperate stage yet. Geoengineering could just make things worse. It's never been done. We don't know the side effects. 2 weeks ago, we had the Australian author Clive Hamilton on Radio EcoShock. Clive explained the big risks of attempting to block out the sun called solar radiation management. In his book Earthmasters, Hamilton describes a somewhat unholy alliance of billionaire Bill Gates, a small clique of worried and respected scientists, some nuclear weapons lab types, and some of the world's biggest oil and coal companies. They are all pushing geoengineering to cool the world. We are going to investigate near-term human extinction. We'll peer into one of the primary sources of this idea, Malcolm Light, from the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. You may find some of his solutions outrageous, but they have been presented, in all seriousness, to the British Parliament. The AMEG group wants geoengineering to start this year, in 2013. We'll hear who is spreading this ultimate climate despair. Some are people I respect, my friends. Others are from the fringe, the anonymous spaces of the Internet. It's a big mix as we encounter the strangest and most fearful prediction of human demise. Oh, and one more thing. I can't give you the final answer. We don't know yet, do we? In fact, as Kolapsnik Dmitry Orlov writes in his blog, we can never know whether we are extinct. Let's begin with that voice that tweaked my brain. My Radio EcoShock show for December 5th, 2012 was called On the Road to Extinction. It features a speech by Dr. Guy McPherson, delivered at the Bluegrass Bioneers Conference in Kentucky. Guy, you will remember, is a qualified natural scientist who left the University of Arizona to pursue his own free speech. I wondered if the extreme statements Guy made about extreme global warming were true. I spent 2 days cross-checking pretty well everything he said. I posted my results online, his sources all checked out. But none of those scientific papers and authoritative reports said humans would go extinct before 2050. Guy McPherson made that jump, in part due to a frightening scientific-looking paper by one Malcolm Light. I'll get to that. These days, Guy's blog, Nature Bats Last, features stories like The Irreconcilable Acceptance of Near-Term Extinction by Daniel A. Drumright, and On the Acceptance of Near-Term Extinction by Gary Gripp, and Preparing for Near-Term Extinction by Carolyn Baker. These people explain how they came to accept that humans are done for, and soon. How do we cope with living in the end times? There are others, a growing chorus of others, and they take this belief very seriously, as if it is already proved by science and by developments in the real world. I disagree. We are all entitled to an opinion. The future, by definition, is not known. Despite all the very real dangers we face in climate change, industrial poisons, hundreds of unstable nuclear reactors, a fossil-powered civilization past its best before date, I think humans will still be around, trying to survive a continually warming world for hundreds of years, if not more. Shortly, I'll explain why. We'll hear about the long human history of end times thinking from popular author and commentator John Michael Greer. I've got a Radio EcoShock reading from a new book by Asoka Bandaraji about current trends of extinction in Aboriginal peoples. Author John Cox wonders if we might choose extinction. We'll hear a clip from Dr. David Archer from the University of Chicago. But first, let's hear those who worry we won't last more than a generation. We'll start with another clip of Dr. Guy McPherson, again on PRN, this time with network founder and longtime radio broadcaster Gary Null.
But I've been studying climate change, and I've seen one paper, one refereed journal article in my career so far that suggests we need to eliminate this set of living arrangements in order to prevent runaway greenhouse. And that was a paper by Tim Garrett at the University of Utah that appeared in the prestigious journal Climatic Change in 2009. So now almost 4 years ago, we have a paper that points out the only hope for preventing runaway climate change is complete collapse. It's among the most important and least cited papers I've ever come across in my career. And when I ask graduate students, postdocs, people who are at the height of their career in terms of their knowledge of literature, when I ask them, they've never heard of that author, they've never heard of that paper. It's buried. Like so many of the important things, it's buried by the culture. It just can't creep out through the stagnant layer of information or misinformation that is this culture. Let me give you the bottom line with respect to climate change. Oliver Tickell synthesized a bunch of research in a 2008 article in The Guardian, the London newspaper. And he concluded that on a planet 4 degrees hotter than baseline, all we can prepare for is human extinction. That was 5 years ago. According to BP's Energy Outlook 2030, which was published in January of this year, global average temperature of Earth will hit the 4 degree centigrade mark in 2030. Hmm. So we have triggered, on the climate front, almost certain human extinction in the relatively near term.
That's 17 years.
Yes, it is.
That's not a long time. That's not time to prepare for governments or countries. Individuals, it could.
That's right. And individuals can prepare to the extent they can move to some place or develop a set of living arrangements that allows them to live a little bit longer. But 17 years is not a long time. And even if we buy into the literature from mainstream climate scientists that say we have until mid-century for human beings, that's still not a long time, and that's still not enough time to make societal changes. That might be why governments and leaders of non-governmental organizations and corporations are not making any of those changes, because it's too late. It's been too late for a while, and some people are in positions that they know it's too late, and they've been in those positions for a while. So I suspect if we're going to effectively shut down nuclear power plants, for example, there's nearly 450 of them around the world, we need to shut them down safely in order to ensure human existence on the planet out beyond their decommissioning. We would also have to deal with climate issues at the same time, meaning we'd have to collapse industrial civilization as quickly as possible. Doing those together seems ridiculous at this point because it takes so much industrial activity to decommission those nuclear power plants. It also takes 10 years or more to safely decommission them. So it looks like we've painted ourselves into a real corner here as civilized human beings. And I don't see a way out. We've triggered those dozen self-reinforcing feedback loops you mentioned at the top of the show. And as near as I can tell, 11 of those 12 are irreversible. We can't turn them around. They just keep going faster and faster. We can get on a treadmill, but there's no way to outrun climate change, not at the level we've triggered it at this point.
That was Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson on The Gary Null Show on May 14th, 2013. Find it on prn.fm. Before we go into the science of near-term human extinction, let's get a different view, this time from John Michael Greer.
The Pleasures of Extinction? That's the title of a blog post in the middle of May by John Michael Greer. He's known as the Grand Archdruid of the Ancient Order of Druids in America, but also as the author of over 20 books. Here are titles of just three that might interest you: The Long Descent, A User's Guide to the End of the Industrial Age; The Ecotechnic Future, Exploring a Post-Peak World; and The Wealth of Nature, Economics, As If Survival Mattered. From Cumberland, Maryland, John Michael Greer, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on.
So the 2012 end of the world, it was kind of a dud, and now you think we've got a new replacement to worry the popular mind?
Well, there had to be a replacement. The thing is, the apocalypse fad, the apocalypse meme, as I called it in one of my other books, is very much a constant factor. People are always looking for something to justify doing nothing, to justify sitting around, because after all, the world's going to end and take care of it. We had Y2K. Look back over your entire lifespan. Somebody was getting very deeply into the idea the world was going to end next week. There are many Harold Campings among us, so there was guaranteed to be something once the whole 2012 thing blew over. And I think we've gotten it now. We're starting to hear a lot of stuff in the blogosphere about near-term extinction.
Right. Well, I sort of missed a little bit of that. Who is Harold Camping?
Oh, Harold Camping was the guy was it earlier in 2012, I think. He was a Christian minister who predicted the rapture was going to happen May something or other. And it was a big media thing. Some people donated a lot of money to him. He had billboards all over the place announcing that, you know, the rapture was going to happen. He'd calculated out some complex thing in the Bible, and then, of course, it didn't happen. And he simply revised the prediction for sometime in October. And then it didn't happen again.
Well, the whole Seventh-day Adventist church is based on that. I hate to say it, and so are a bunch of other churches, that it's gonna end right away.
It's any day now. Any day now for the last 2,000 years.
Why? Why do we humans have this perverse hope the world will end, preferably while we're around to see it happen? Some people are disappointed they died before it happened.
Oh, it's a really complicated thing, and there are many different reasons why people, I think, fixate on this apocalypse meme, this notion that we're the big generation, we're the ones who are going to see all the fireworks go off. But especially in times like these, times when there's a lot of trouble, there's a lot of economic crisis, there's all kinds of pressures and a lot of reason to think that we can no longer keep on living the way we're used to living. I think it's very easy to say, well, the world's going to have to take care of that. I don't have to get rid of my SUV. I don't have to, look at retooling my life to actually live within the limits of a fragile planet. No, no, no. The world's going to end. Don't worry about it. Pedal to the metal, baby.
Well, isn't there a fundamental difference, though, between scientific measurements that some of these near-term extinction people are claiming and Christian belief in the end times?
Well, of course, to a certain extent there is. But the problem is that these scientific concepts are being pulled out of context. These are hypotheses, okay? They're speculations. They have some numbers behind them. They are very uncertain. I think of the argument being made by, I've forgotten the guy's name, Light, I think his last name is, who has this theory whereby methane buildup over the poles will do X, Y, and Z and cause all life to be extinct by X period. It's an interesting hypothesis. It's an interesting speculation. Does the fact that somebody has said this might happen mean that it will happen? No, of course not. But people are presenting it as though this proves that we're all going to die. And that's where we take the leap away from science and into the apocalyptic mythology.
For a while there, the peak oil movement was also predicting a big crash, and we were all going to go primitive, like James Howard Kunstler's world made by hand. Why didn't that happen?
No, the thing is, the peak oil scene was and remains very diverse. There are people in the peak oil scene who are very much into next Thursday we're going to be in the Stone Age. There are people in the peak oil scene all the way on the other spectrum who are saying, you know, this is our opportunity to make that great leap into green technologies, blah, blah, blah. Then there's kind of the mainstream of us who are saying, no, actually, we're in a world of hurt. We are facing a long, difficult, grueling time as we retool our expectations and our societies for a world where we have a lot less energy and a lot fewer raw materials than we used to. And one of the reasons that the whole overnight collapse thing has in the peak oil scene has been kind of fading out is precisely that those of us in the mainstream, those of us who are saying, no, it's just a world of hurt. We're facing, you know, to use the title of my book, The Long Descent. We've been making predictions all along, and our predictions have been right. We were predicting years ago that, you know, the price of oil was going to ratchet upward to levels that economists said were completely impossible, 100 bucks a barrel. There were people not that long ago who were insisting that that can't be achieved by the time it reaches that. This society will crash in flames, blah, blah, blah. That didn't happen. But the other side, the people like Daniel Yergin who were insisting that oil was going to hit a permanent plateau of $38 a barrel, that didn't happen either. So the peak oil scene is, the main currents of it have really tended to focus on something more realistic. Not the world is going to end, but the world is going to change in some very difficult, challenging, hard ways.
Well, John Michael Greer, you have your own vision of the downfall of industrial society, which you call catabolic collapse. What is that, and why is it different from climate-driven extinction, for example?
Well, actually, it incorporates climate-driven decline. Now, obviously, the main difference is that climate-driven extinction assumes that by some point, I think the usual NTE claim at this point is like 2030 or 2045, there will be no human beings left alive anywhere. I'm not saying that. I think that's, it is perhaps possible that might happen, but it's far from probable, and it would be completely unrealistic to claim that it's certain. So catabolic collapse is based on the idea that as a society runs short on resources, including energy, it starts feeding on itself. It starts cannibalizing its own infrastructure, and it starts scrapping things that in its unessential services. It starts basically just feeding on itself. That's what catabolism means. And so, in effect, it devours itself in the process of collapsing. Now, this one of the reasons I developed this theory is precisely that this is what we see when we look at how other civilizations have collapsed in the past. They've kind of fed on their own infrastructure, their own internal resource base, until there was very little left. And so my proposal, the catabolic collapse proposal, which is, again, not certain, it is simply my proposal as to what the most likely process is that we're going to see a period of between 1 to 3 centuries of ragged decline, various crises on regional, local, national, global scales, sort of like stumbling down or falling down a staircase, not like falling off a cliff, so it's sort of thump, 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 down you go, over between 1 to 3 centuries and ending in a dark age.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with author and commentator John Michael Greer. Getting back to that idea of near-term human extinction, how do you see that developing in the echo chamber of the Internet? Will it be strong enough to affect some people's life decisions?
I think it already is, and in a variety of ways. The question is very much whether it catches the imagination of more than a few people, and that's really hard to predict. It's like hula hoops or you know, any other fad. But I think there's a lot of people, now that 2012 isn't around anymore, who are looking for a reason not to deal with the future, who are looking for a reason not to face the challenges that we actually do face. And near-term extinction is a great way to do that. You can simply say, oh, well, we're all going to die anyway. Who cares? Let me go burn a few dinosaurs. Or whatever. I mean, there are various things that people might do in response to that, but I don't think most of them will be productive. It's, you know, it may be this, it may be something else. Maybe we will all, there will be this big announcement that the Earth's going to be devoured by a giant space walrus or something.
You know, it's so strange. You write about America's preoccupation with what sociologist Philip Lamy called fractured apocalypses. Why is there so much more of this in America than in other countries, do you think?
Well, you have to remember that Europe exported all of its religious kooks to the United States. That's what we call American immigration. For hundreds of years, from the time that the Pilgrims landed in Massachusetts, all the way up until about the beginning of the 20th century, all kinds of religious groups – from Europe were taking ship, coming over here, and in Europe was just waving and saying goodbye, have a great time. So we ended up with religion as a primary organizing principle over here in America, when in most of Europe it's an irrelevance. So we've got all of those people we got the descendants of all those people who are very, very deeply religious, who left Europe, who left wherever, to settle someplace where they could pursue their religious vision. And so we've got this weird society where, on the one hand, we've got the tradition of freedom of religion, where people can practice whatever religion they want to. On the other hand, we've got this sense that religion is very, very important in our culture. And so it feeds all kinds of religions, all kinds of secular quasi-religions, all kinds of sort of religious thought and secular drag. The singularity is a great example. It's the rapture dressed up in science fiction.
Right. So, John Michael Greer, you're heading off to the Age of Limits conference. What will you be talking about there?
I'll be talking, first of all, about progress as a mythology, as a religious belief. The way that belief in progress has been the most important religion of American life for many years now. And that now that progress is coming to an end, we need to start looking at how we're going to organize our lives and understand the world in a world after progress. That's one thing. The other thing that I'll be talking about is the way that some of the old systems of community organization that were practiced in the United States before the beginning of our imperial age of excess and abundance, how some of those may be useful tools for organizing local community in the deindustrial age that's coming upon us now.
And you've taken some heat for connecting that near-term extinction meme with things like the Y2K computer crash. What are people saying?
You bet I'm taking it. Well, the thing is, it's just like speculative bubbles. Everyone wants to say this time it's different. This one, my apocalyptic faith is not the same as all these other apocalyptic faiths, even though it's basically the same thing, using slightly different cherry-picked factoids to justify it. Okay, big deal. It's the same narrative. The song remains the same, even though it's a different verse. And so, people have been flying off the handle. There's been a lot of emoting. And that's fine. That's fine. I'm hoping that at least some people stop and look at the near-term extinction thing and look at the factual basis behind it, which is really rather frail, and say, okay, well, here are these worst-case scenarios. Okay, I got that. We've stacked up a whole bunch of worst-case scenarios, and if all of these horrible things happen, then maybe possibly humanity will go extinct. Okay, that's cool. I get that. That doesn't mean we should all just kind of sit down and fold our hands and go, oh, whoa, we're all going to die.
Okay, well, is there anything you would like to add as we wrap up here?
As we wrap up, I would say the important thing is that thing from The Life of Brian. You remember when Brian was shouting to the crowd, you must all think for yourselves, and they all shout back, yes, we must think for ourselves in perfect unison. Let's get past that. Thinking for yourself does not mean following something you read on the internet, even if I'm not, and I include my blog in that. I want people to ask their own questions, to come up with their own answers, to think through things like, okay, here are these cherry-picked worst-case scenarios. What does this actually mean? And to go through that and think through that and then say, okay, what am I going to do about all this? How am I going to change my life to deal with the future that I see coming toward us? And if more of us do that, I think we'll accomplish much more in the world.
Well, you've made me smile a couple of times, and I needed that. We've been chatting about Ultimate Things with John Michael Greer. He's a prolific commentator, speaker, and author of more than 20 books. Check out The Long Descent, A User's Guide to the End of the Industrial Age, for example. John Michael's posts are regularly at the archdruidreport.blogspot.ca, or find that link in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. John Michael Greer, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Greer was heavily criticized by those who believe near-term human extinction is inevitable and is a scientific point of view. When I raised the danger that all sorts of end-time seekers and tinfoil hat types would pile on board this new idea, participants in the near-term extinction discussion site, yes, that's already online, they said, of course, we know that, but that doesn't change the science behind what we are saying. So let's look at that science. In his seminal post on June 20th, 2012, titled We're Done, Guy McPherson links to this quote from Malcolm Light, quote, "This process of methane release will accelerate exponentially, release huge quantities of methane into the atmosphere, and lead to the demise of all life on Earth before the middle of this century, end quote. McPherson has defended Malcolm Light and the Arctic Methane Emergency Group in various places, including Transition Voice, the organ of the transition movement. Now remember, I'm not questioning McPherson's other sources, including Utah Professor Tim Garrett, the International Energy Agency, and a long list of others. I've checked those, and Guy is right. They are frightening predictions of warming up to 6 degrees centigrade or more by 2100, a climatic catastrophe for sure. I'm concerned about the conclusion that we will be wiped out soon, and especially using Malcolm Light of the AMEG group as a source. Malcolm Light's core article, posted on the Arctic Methane Emergency Group website, is titled, Global Extinction Within One Human Lifetime as a Result of a Spreading Atmospheric Arctic Methane Heat Wave and Surface Firestorm. In what looks like a scientific paper complete with complex graphs and charts, we find this stunning announcement, quote, the absolute mean extinction time for the Northern Hemisphere is 2031.8 and for the Southern Hemisphere is 2047.6, with a final mean extinction time for three-quarters of the Earth's surface of 2039.6, end quote. Well, that's pretty precise, isn't it? On August 2031, say goodbye for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. There is a lot in this article. I won't call it a scientific paper until I can find evidence it was peer-reviewed or published in an official journal. This theory and the radical solutions I'll discuss in a minute were presented to Britain's Environmental Audit Committee. The UK Parliament responded to this all-party committee's report, Protecting the Arctic. This AMEG paper went well beyond the fringe into serious consideration by a major government. We get slightly different estimates of when humans will go extinct in notes to one of the complex graph in Light's article. It reads, quote, Figure 8 shows a different method of interpreting the extinction fields defined by the 12 plus 3 plus 6% year-long lifetime of methane, IPCC 1992, assumed to have been instantaneously injected into the Arctic atmosphere in 2010, and the lifetime of the globally spreading methane atmospheric veil at the different methane global warming potentials. The start of extinction begins between 2020 and 2026.9, and extinction will be complete in the Northern Hemisphere by 2057. Extinction will begin around 2024 in the Southern Hemisphere and will be completed by 2087. Extinction in the Southern Hemisphere, in particular in Antarctica, will be delayed by some 20 years. This makes property on the Trans-Antarctic Mountains of premium value for those people wish to survive in coming methane firestorm for a few decades longer. I'm sorry, but I find that a little bit laughable. Let's pick up on that key phrase, assumed to have been instantaneously injected into the Arctic atmosphere in 2010. That leads to the building block of the whole theory and the panic to geoengineer the planet. An unlikely source has disputed this essential point. Somewhere out there in cyberspace, there is a person who made tens of thousands of posts on the site democraticunderground.com. She or he used the name Muriel Volstrangler, which just happens to be an alias used by British comedian John Cleese in a book. When we return with Radio EcoShock, we'll uncover the story of massive Arctic drilling dressed up as an environmental solution to global warming. Stay tuned.